is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
In terms of a leader, I mean, obviously, I look at someone who's a hard worker, has the respect of their teammates, holds people accountable, doesn't make excuses, doesn't point fingers, and someone who has kind of a mental toughness about them.
Kyle Juergens has been the head boys basketball coach at Scott Catholic High School in Omaha, Nebraska for 11 years. During his tenure, the Skyhawks have won three state championships in 2014, 2020, and 2023. Kyle started his coaching career at Millard North High School, where he was the varsity assistant for the basketball, football, and soccer teams for 8 years. Juergens graduated from Nebraska Wesleyan University, where he played soccer and earned a degree in mathematics. He attended North Platte High School and was a three-sport athlete in football, basketball, and soccer.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Joe Crispin, head men's basketball coach at Rowan University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Be prepared to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Kyle Juergens, head boys basketball coach at Scott Catholic High School in Omaha, Nebraska.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are pleased to welcome Kyle Juergens, head boys basketball coach at Scott Catholic High School in Omaha, Nebraska. Kyle, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
We are thrilled to have you on. Looking forward to diving into all the things that you've been able to do thus far in your coaching career. I want to start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me about some of your early experiences in the game of basketball, what you remember, what made you fall in love with it.
Sure. Well, grew up in a house where sports were a big deal, and probably started with my dad and cousins and uncles. And I mean, anytime we got together, it was, depending on the season, pickle in the backyard or, throwing the football around or shooting hoops or what have you. But, I got the love of the game for sure from my dad. He taught me how to throw a baseball, football, shoot a basketball, all those types of things. So, just grew up, with athletics kind of all around. And my dad still kind of played him when I was younger, in the slow pitch softball days and the pickup basketball days, you tagged along with those types of things. And then I grew up in a neighborhood with, a bunch of kids that we had a lot across the way, and we'd go play, baseball there and meet at everybody's, people's houses and play basketball. Some of the stuff that probably needs to happen more, in this day and age.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Playing out in the driveway. I think, you had a coach, TJ O'Connor, on earlier in the fall. We grew up, you know, three houses from each other. And so he's a head coach now here in Omaha as well. And so I can remember his uncle's the college coach out at the community college. We would go out there and watch games. And as you got older, you know, the high school that I was going to attend, going and watching those games and just kind of looking at those guys. And that's some of the stuff we talk to our guys about too, is, you know, don't get caught up in these, you know, these little kids that are here watching you. They're looking up and they want to be you someday. And that was kind of me. I always watched those high school guys and said, man, I can't wait to play on that floor someday. And so that's kind of where it originated from me. And that was always the dream in high school to be a varsity basketball player, and was fortunate enough to be.
I know you ended up playing soccer in college, but as you grew up, which of the sports was your favorite? Because oftentimes there's a sport that maybe you're the best at, but maybe it's not necessarily your favorite. Did your allegiances switch as you got older? Just kind of how did you navigate which one was your favorite, which one you were playing, which how much you practiced outside of it? Just give me a rundown.
Yeah, you basically nailed it. You know, when I was younger, it was just whatever I was playing, I loved. But as I got older, I was, you know, I was pretty unique in that I was a four-sport kid, in that the high school I went to, I played football in the fall, basketball in the winter, soccer was in the spring, and our high school did not have spring baseball, only Legion baseball in the summer, and I played Legion baseball in the summer. And I did that up until the summer before my senior year. I decided not to play baseball. I also had injuries in there too. When I was a sophomore, I tore my ACL returning a punt in maybe the first or second football game of the season. You know, kind of retweaked it again. And so that took me out most of my sophomore year because I had to wait to get surgery on it. And so that took me out of all of football, my sophomore year, basketball and soccer. And then I played baseball that summer, redid my ACL, but I had to have it scoped again. So I didn't get to play much of my junior year of football either. So my football, I played as a freshman and then I played as a senior. But then was able to play, you know, the rest of them as a junior and senior. I mean, basketball was always my first love. It's what I love to play the most. You know, I got recruited to play football, basketball, and soccer. Soccer was probably what I was best at. I mean, football, I'd have had to get a lot bigger and, you know, a little bit the same in basketball too. But I loved them all. And probably one of the biggest reasons I quit the summer before my senior year in terms of baseball is we had a really good team and there was about eight or nine of us seniors. And our coach had come from California, had coached high school basketball in California. And he was going to take us to, you know, to Omaha to a few team camps. And then we piled in a 15 passenger van, like nine of us, my coach, his wife, his kids. And we drove all the way out to California. And we were out there for about a week. We played a bunch of old high schools that he used to play against when he coached out there. And I, you know, I really didn't want to miss those experiences playing baseball. And so, because those seniors were basketball players, I was kind of a multi-sport guy. But it was, I mean, it was huge for us because, I mean, you can imagine 24 hours in a 15 passenger van, you get to know each other pretty well. I mean, you become,
absolutely,
talk about becoming a family. You know, those types of things were big. And then that following year, my senior year, we had a really good basketball season. Still, I mean, at the high school, North Platte High School, where I went, still the, I think the best, I mean, record wise, best season in school history. We got beaten the semifinals of the state basketball tournament in the highest class in Nebraska. And, you know, those are the, I mean, those are the memories that stick with you. I mean, talk about high school and in basketball. I mean, playing in the state tournament is, you know, something I'll never, ever forget. And I mean, we must have played in a semifinal game in front of 8,000 to 10,000 people. And those are just things that you don't get to do. I mean, even if you go on to play college basketball, you know, at some smaller colleges, you're not going to play in those types of atmospheres and so environments. And it was just really, really special. And it was a special group. It's one of the biggest things I remember about, you know, my high school career.
Are you still in touch with a lot of your high school classmates, teammates?
Yeah. So one of them ended up my roommate for a couple of years in college. And he coincidentally, he was like my next door neighbor growing up. And then another one is a coach in a small town right outside of Omaha. He's a head coach, and it was cool because we both he and I, so we're in class B, which is one class below the highest class in Nebraska, and he's in there's C1 and C2. So C1's the next class down, and his school's in C1, and they won the state championship last year, and so did we. And so a lot of people didn't know that we were high school. Like we started on our high school team together growing up. And his dad was our, you know, we had kind of a little travel team when we were in middle school. His dad was our coach growing up. So that was pretty cool deal too. So yeah, stay in touch with him and yeah, a lot of the other guys too. One of the other guys just got the head coaching job at the high school we attended. He was the JV coach there for a long time, and that guy stepped down, and now he's the head coach there. So stay in touch with him too. So yeah, a lot of connections there, a lot of you know, special relationships.
Talk a little bit about the college decision process and how you ended up at Nebraska Wesleyan and how it ended up being soccer as opposed to the other sports that obviously you had a passion for all of them.
Yeah, I did. And I just had a pretty good year in soccer when I was a senior. And, you know, the coach recruited me, you know, pretty hard, and they were successful too. And, you know, I was looking at some smaller colleges, you know, football wise, basketball wise in Nebraska, but Nebraska Wesleyan's in Lincoln, where the University of Nebraska is. And so I liked that it was a smaller college, but still in kind of that college town atmosphere. I liked that, you know, when I took my visit, I liked the campus, I liked the school, and, you know, I liked that they had some good players and were going to be successful. And we were, I went there and played soccer, and we made the NCAA tournament every single year we were there. And so, yeah, I think it was just kind of a deal where that was kind of what I was best at, but still never stopped playing basketball. And that was kind of the cool thing is I found a bunch of kids in college who were pretty good high school players, and we would play pickup and, you know, all meet at the gym at the same time on certain days and, you know, get some pretty good pickup games. You know, was always a good time. And then, you know, still kind of had that passion for, you know, coaching kids. When I was in high school, my little brother was probably a sixth grader, and so I coached his team, and I had a lot of fun with that. When I went to college, I started pre-med, did that for about a semester, and then just kind of felt, you know, it wasn't maybe the right path for me. Just kind of still felt a calling to, you know, athletics. Just they were such a big part of my life. And I didn't know, I just thought I didn't really want to do something that wasn't going to allow me to be around them. And I really, really did enjoy the coaching. And so I switched to education and was always, you know, pretty good at math, kind of the guy who helped people in class a lot. And so I thought I would do the math route. And my high school basketball coach, his name's Dan Moore. He actually just retired a few. He actually moved to Omaha, got another job here in Omaha and just retired. But he was a math teacher and a head basketball coach. So you can imagine he had a big influence on me and someone I really looked up to. And, you know, obviously I'm a head basketball coach and a math teacher. So, you know, that kind of says it right there.
When you think about your experience as a college athlete and you talk to players that you may have had in your career that want to be college athletes, what's one or two pieces of advice or things that you tell them as they're going through their process of being recruited? Maybe something that you learned from your experience.
Yeah. Just to kind of, you know, make sure you do your due diligence just on everything, you know, you're not just going there for, you know, whatever it is, football, basketball, you know, you're going there for the school, you're going there for the experience, you're going there for the people. And so just to make sure that, you know, you're doing it kind of for the right reasons and, you know, it's something that you feel really, really good about because, you know, you only get to do it once. And, you know, I say that and kids kind of transfer all over the place now. So, but it's, you know, you hope you're trying to find the right fit for you. And, you know, so that's kind of what I encouraged our guys who get recruited basketball wise. And we've had some good basketball players just go to school, but of late we've had some, you know, go on to the next level. And, you know, our two better players from last year, one's at South Dakota and then one's at Wayne State, a Division II college around here. I think they both kind of found a really, really good fit and they seem to love it. They love the guys they're playing with, the coaches, the school. You know, I've kept in contact and they're, you know, they're fitting in, I think, to the programs real well too. So I think that's probably the last thing is make sure, you know, you're a good fit with, you know, I don't know, style of play, kind of, wherever you're going, what they kind of lean on, stand for type of deal. And I think those two guys did a really good job of that. But those are always things that you want to encourage guys to do because, you know, it's not just basketball or whatever sport you're playing. There's a lot of other things that go with it.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think sometimes kids and I think even oftentimes parents sometimes get caught up in just looking at one aspect, whether it's that and primarily you're thinking about sport. And we all know how much time that parents pour into their kids and what they do in youth sports. As you said 15 minutes ago, we could probably use, and this has been a frequent topic here on the pod, Kyle, is we could probably use some more pickup in the driveway, at the playground, at the sandlot. We could probably use more sports like that where parents aren't always there. But the reality is that era is maybe not completely gone, but it's disappearing at a pretty quick rate. And it is. Because parents are so invested in their sports career, I think oftentimes you see people are so focused on the sports side of it that they forget that, hey, you got to go to school there too. And that there's the social environment, the academic environment, all those things are so critical in finding the right fit. And I love when you said, hey, you got to do your due diligence. And I think that really is great advice for any high school athlete that's out there, no matter what sport you're looking at, is just to make sure that you consider all the options and figure it out and make a good choice based on really looking into what it is that you're going to do, because otherwise you can end up in a situation where it's not the best for you, and then you have to transfer, and there's a whole bunch of different things that go along with that. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, it's like you're saying, you got to let them figure it out, you know, for themselves a little bit too. And that goes back to the driveways. Like, we're trying to do, you know, everything for these kids and figure it out for them. And, you know, back in the day, we kind of, you know, you left the house, you went out and, you know, you played in the driveway, or you figured it out, on your own. And there's not a lot of that. And so kids struggle with that when they have to do it on their own. It's been kind of done for them. And so I agree 100% with everything you just said.
Yeah, I'm sure you see that as a teacher. Jason teaches fourth grade, and I'm right now teaching elementary phys ed. And you see it just in their ability to navigate for themselves. And you think about you and your friends playing on the driveway or playing backyard football or whatever, and you kind of got to agree to a set of rules and what's out of bounds, and you got to govern yourselves. And kids today, they honestly don't really have very many opportunities, mostly not necessarily of their own fault, but our fault as parents and as society, that it's more difficult. Kids just don't have the opportunity to be put in those positions where they have to kind of organize themselves and then work it out when there is a disagreement, because there's almost always an adult there to step in or intervene or organize. And I do think that, again, I don't know exactly what the ramifications of that are in terms of how the generation of kids that's growing up today, how that's going to impact them as older athletes, but also as just adults. But I got to believe that there's something that's missing that our generation learned just by doing those things out and about without parents. And kids today, and I say this all the time, my own kids included, they just don't, it's not that they don't want to do that. They just don't get the opportunity because we as parents don't parent in the same way that parents did in the, you know, in the 80s and early 90s, where you can just kind of go out and be outside and running around. And now, you know, you want to know where your kids are every moment of the day. So
I'm laughing because my wife, you know, I got a 6-year-old, and they'll, you know, she'll be downstairs with, you know, and you'll hear a bunch of squawking, and all of a sudden they'll come up, and I'll go, no, you guys go back down there and figure it out. Like, you know, my wife will try to start, you know, and I'm like, no, don't do that. They can go back downstairs and you guys figure it out. Like, they can figure it out on their own. It's been done before. Trust me.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so true. I mean, it's just there's a different expectation that we have as parents. And I think in some ways we're doing them a tremendous disservice by not allowing them to do that. And I get to a certain extent when I think about just the way I grew up and kind of having free reign around in the neighborhood. And then as I got older, driving around the city of Cleveland to different playgrounds and parks and places with my friends and gyms. Yeah. And I think about my own son doing that same thing. And I'm not sure, look, if he could do it in the environment that I was doing.
Right.
I guess looking back at it, was it safe? Was it not safe? I don't know. I never perceived it as not being safe. Maybe it wasn't by today's standards. I have no idea when I think about it. But by the same token, like I said, it's just, we just don't give our kids that same opportunity to do those things the way that previous generations got the opportunity to do that. And the ship has sailed. I don't think it's ever going back. So I guess I always look at it as, okay, how can we maximize the situation that we have? And your example that you just gave with your daughters is a great example of a way to, in a safe environment, put the onus back on them. Like, hey, you're going to be safe in our basement to work this out and maybe argue a little bit and come up with a solution. And, you know, they're not out on the streets doing whatever, but they're still learning those skills. And I think that's an important piece of, you know, what we as adults, coaches, teachers, parents, it's part of our responsibility. Let's go back to when you graduated and tell me a little bit about your job search.
looking around, okay, you've obviously been an athlete your whole life, and now athletics is going to go away in terms of you being a player on a school team. You could still obviously play pickup and get involved in that way, but you're going into a different phase of your life. So tell me a little bit about the job search when you graduate.
Yeah. So, I did, when I switched to education, I did some coaching, around Lincoln. I coached some soccer. One of the class A is the highest, level in Nebraska. There's quite a few in Lincoln. And so I helped with coach some summer basketball, for one of those, schools in Lincoln. When I student taught, I coached, football, flag football, and then the eighth grade basketball team at the place that I student taught. So I had some experience there. And then because I took that extra semester, I actually graduated in December. And so I had second semester to do some subbing and kind of apply to different places. So my first job interview was at a school in Omaha called Millard North. It's one of the bigger high schools in Nebraska. And I actually had another interview at Millard West, which coincidentally is where my wife teaches now. So I went to Millard North. Actually, my car broke down on the way from Lincoln to Omaha on my first job interview ever. And I had to pull over, change a tire. It's a long story. There was construction. I ended up having to call and say, there's no chance I can get there. And they just said, well, come back tomorrow. And I said, okay. I mean, I was in a, you know, full suit on the side of the road sweating. And
it's always fun. That's always
Yeah. fun. So I went back the next day and just had a great conversation with the principal, the head of the math department, and then another guy in the math department who, again, coincidentally now, he was my mentor, my math teacher mentor. When I got to, you know, they pair you up with kind of a veteran teacher. And he's now my athletic director at SCUT. So kind of crazy how things kind of come full circle, but just had a great, you know, interview, if you could call it that. It was more of a conversation around a table, and I, you know, thought, man, I really like this place, and you know, probably Lincoln or Omaha was where I kind of wanted to end up. And I knew one of the basketball coach at Millard North. He had come from a school in Lincoln Northeast, and when I was in high school, we played against them, and we were very good and they were very good. And so he knew who I was from, you know, putting me on a scouting report. And so I had a kind of relationship there right away. And he was, you know, totally open to me, coaching basketball. I talked to the football coach who's, you know, he's one of the better, football coaches in the state of Nebraska. In my opinion, he's kind of a legend around here, just retired after 41 years after this season. And, he allowed me to coach football. And then same with the soccer coach. You know, I told him I played in soccer and I wanted to help out, and they had no paid positions, open. So, they did on the girl side, and I just said, well, that's not really the, you know, avenue I'm looking to go. So I ended up my first year, I ended up volunteer coaching football, basketball, and soccer. So I made no money for it, but I coached all three seasons. So, I mean, I dove in head first, I guess, as you can say, cause I did three sports there for 8 years. So it's a lot, but absolutely, I enjoyed every second of it and got a lot out of, you know, all those experiences.
All right. So just in general, and obviously you're coaching three different sports and there's three different sets of circumstances and three different head coaches that you're working with. But when you think about your time as an assistant, what are one or two lessons that you learned as an assistant that you feel like made you a better head coach once you got that opportunity?
Oh man. You know, that's like picking a couple out of so many. the guy that I coached for football and basketball, the two guys I coached for, were, and number one, incredible with kids. I mean, they knew how to motivate kids. They knew how to get kids to respond, and incredibly hard workers too. And so I think the first thing I learned is the work that it took to do it. And I say do it, but do it the right way. I mean, if you're going to do it the right way, you can't be afraid to put the time in. And that's something that they taught me right away, is that, you know, you got to be here, and you got to be here every day. You got to show up for the kids, because that's the only way they're going to respect you. And that's the only way they're going to work hard for you. And that was something that I learned, right away, is what it took to do it at that level. And, you know, and then just bits and pieces along the way of, you know, you can know everything there is to know about basketball and the X's and O's and all that stuff. But at the high school level, you know, you better be able to get them to play hard night in, night out, practice hard, do everything at a, you know, at an effort level that's consistently working hard. And then I think, you know, doing everything for the team. I mean, that's the other thing, is, you know, putting your, you know, I say putting your ego in your pocket and putting the team before, you know, all the other stuff. And the guys that I coached for were really, really good, you know, with those types of things. And I picked up a lot from them because of it.
As an assistant, it's kind of like, I'm sure, picking between which one of them is your favorite kid. So as an assistant coach, which one of those three sports was the most fun? Which one was the most difficult? Just give me some thoughts on each one of those different sports, being an assistant, and just how you approached each one.
Yeah, well, so each one was kind of different, because football, I was a lower level coach, like a freshman coach, and your job on Fridays was to go scout the other team's opponent. So every Friday I would go, you know, watch whoever we were going to play the next week. And I think Coach Petito is the coach that I coached for. And I think as I learned more, you know, that was the other thing in terms of X's and O's football wise, you know, I mean, I wasn't even close to the understanding of, you know, all the things that go into it. And after a few years, I think he saw that, you know, I'd grown in that regard. And he came to me and asked if I wanted to go up in the booth on a headset with him, and, or, you know, kind of as an offensive guy who's, you know, looking for different things. And so, I mean, I was like kind of shocked, but at the same time, like, okay. And he kind of knew how to do those types of things, put you in those positions where, you know, force you out of your comfort zone. He was just really, really good with that. I mean, not just with, you know, not with just with his players, but with his assistant coaches, because, you know, then the rate at which I learned was incredible, to the point where, you know, probably the year before I got my head coaching job, we ran the wing bone. So like triple option, you know, football, and there's a wing bone association, and there was a high school close to Omaha who a guy had just taken the head coaching job and wanted to run the offense. So through the Wingbone Association, they send like a veteran coach to help him with in a summer camp. And he came to me and he said, I want you to go do it. And I kind of was like, me? You want me to go do it? Are you sure? Like, I don't know that I can do that. And he's like, yeah, you can do it. And so I went and it was an awesome experience. And I helped at the school and, you know, it was exactly what he said. I mean, I came home, I remember telling, well, she wasn't my wife yet, but just telling her like, I know that I'm ready to become a head coach. You know, I'm like, I feel like I could be the head football coach at that school I was just at right now. And so, you know, that kind of, it was almost like he did it to show me that I was ready. And so that was kind of my evolution through football. And in basketball, you know, I think Chip Baugh is the guy who I coached with basketball wise. I think he saw something in me early, and I was kind of the assistant for the JV and then like a varsity type assistant. The guy who was the JV coach left after my first year and he gave me the JV job. I did that for like 4 or 5 years, and then he asked if I wanted to move to a varsity assistant, just the varsity assistant, because they didn't have a paid varsity assistant when I started, and then they added it. And he kind of asked, do you want that, or do you want the JV coach to stay the JV coach? And I kind of thought to myself, well, you know, being the JV coach, I still have to do, you know, head coaching things, in-game head coaching things. And if I just become the varsity assistant, I won't, you know, I won't have that. And that won't right. get
you're not
me
getting those same reps. Yeah, you're not
yeah that won't
reps.
Get me better as a coach. And so I actually told him that I want to stay the JV coach. I mean, I know, you know, I don't really care about the optics. I'm just concerned about, you know, getting better. And so kept doing that until, you know, the guy, the varsity assistant got a head coaching job. And then at that point, I felt like I was ready to just be the varsity assistant and kind of start looking for head coaching jobs. And you know, after a year or two of being just the varsity assistant, I got my first head coaching job. And so that was kind of how that went. And in soccer, I was the varsity assistant from the get-go. And the guy that I coached with there, Bill Cunningham, was he was awesome to work with. He was very, you know, different than the other two coaches I coached for. You know, he was very, you know, he was very teacher laid back, you know, just a different type of coaching style. And so I picked up, you know, many things from him in that regard too. But all three guys that I coached for there were huge influences, on me as a coach. And I enjoyed each experience, you know, individually. And we had, you know, we had success and we had some, you know, good memories and, just cool things that I'll remember always.
Hey coach, want to take your team to the next level this season? Introducing Game Changer, the ultimate game day assistant with tools to give you a winning advantage. With Game Changer, you can track stats, keep score, and even live stream games, all for free. Get the stats and crucial game video you need to lead your team to victory, all from the palm of your hand. Coach smarter this season with Game Changer. Download Game Changer today on iOS or Android and make this season one to remember. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads. That's gc.com/hoopheads.
When you got that first head coaching job, what do you remember about the interview process, questions that they asked you, maybe questions that you had about taking that job? Just tell us a little bit about the interview process.
Well, I mean, I had gotten told no already from other places. So it wasn't my first interview. And that's kind of what I tell people is, you know, for, I don't know, maybe 2 years, at least a year, but 2 years, maybe I applied for jobs. You know, some didn't get interviews for, some did, you know, and so, and it's just one of those deals where, you know, you thought, I mean, I can remember, you know, not getting a job and then calling and saying, you know, it came down between you and this guy and, you know, man, we might be making a mistake, but we just, we know this guy, you know, better because he was kind of a part of their community and, you know, we don't know you as well. So maybe we're making the safe choice and, you know, kind of feeling discouraged, but trying to, you know, hopefully, I don't know. I mean, just kind of hang in that, it's for the best. And it truly was because the job at the school I was at opened up and I applied for it. And another guy who had, you know, coached for many, many years in Omaha just retired and, he wanted to come and coach there and they gave him the job. And, you know, that was kind of a bummer, obviously, after I'd put, you know, 8 years in there, but, you know, kind of said to myself, well, you know, I got to look at it, you know, glass half full type of deal. He's obviously got a lot of experience and I knew him through the coaching world. I'll just, you know, I'll just learn from him. And I kind of told my wife at that point, like, I think I'll just, you know, I'm not going to apply for any other jobs. You know, we'll look at it after next season. And then the Scut job happened to open up. Because the head coach was the principal and they didn't really want the principal to, I think, continue coaching basketball because that's just a tough deal to do. And the AD was an old North Platte guy. And he reached out to me and just said, you know, I don't know if you're, you know, going to get the Miller North job because at that time it hadn't come out. And he just said, but if not, would you want to, you know, throw your name in this deal? And so I did. And, they interviewed me, asked about, you know, all the things that, you know, the normal things of, you know, what, you know, how do you handle parents and what, you know, what does your program look like? And, you know, I was pretty seasoned at that point at answering those types of questions. The nerves really weren't there anymore. And so I interviewed and then, a week later hadn't heard. And then they got back to me and it came down to like two guys and I had to go back and interview again with the president of the school. And then they called and offered me the job and it was a cool feeling. It was an awesome feeling. It was something that I'd worked super hard for. It was something that, I had always wanted. You know, and at the same time, it was scary too. It was one of those deals where I was leaving a place I knew very well. And I was leaving a bunch of people and coaches that I knew very well. We had a really, really tight, coaching staff at Miller North. I mean, I think at one point our staff had went on and I would say six of us who were on staff at Miller North ended up head coaches at one point. I mean, a lot of us still are. So to kind of look back and think about, you know, we had a staff of eight or nine guys and six are still now head coaches. And we were all really close too. I mean, our families were close. I mean, one of the guys was in my wedding and, you know, and he's actually the team I went and scouted tonight. His kid was my ring bearer, and now he's the second leading scorer on the team we have to play next week. So it's
shut the ring bearer down.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those deals where I just, you know, I was like, I want to establish that at Scut, but it's a scary deal. How does that just happen? And so I can honestly say, you know, this is year 11 and I feel like our coaching staff is just like that. A bunch of guys that really get along, are super close, you know, families know each other. It's just kind of that family atmosphere because, you know, I mean, you put a lot of time into it. And when you put that much time into it, you better enjoy who you do it with.
Absolutely.
And so that's a huge part of it. And and something that, you know, I'm super, super grateful for.
How did you put together your first staff 11 years ago? And then sort of how has that changed, morphed over time in terms of what are you looking for in an assistant coach? Obviously you want somebody that you feel comfortable with, that you want to hang around with and spend that much time with, but just how'd you put together that first staff? And then as you've gone along, how have you built that staff and what kind of characteristics are you looking for?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy because it's the guy who had retired from another school in Omaha who got the Millard North job where I was at, his assistant then, his name's Dave Eckley. He applied for, he was his assistant for like 18 years at that school, and he applied for that job. And so he didn't get it. And so the first thing I did was go to him because, you know, he was a guy who had a lot of experience. He had been under a really good coach and a successful program. And I knew he would be, I mean, just fantastic with kids. And so I knew that, and just great to work with. And he's still on my staff today. And so getting him was huge. And I, you know, just told him, I said, you know, we're hitting the ground at the same time. I want this to be a team effort type of deal. I want to make this a place where that the culture or the, you know, is something that we're proud of, where we build on, and I want to do it, you know, kind of together. And he said, okay, yeah, I'm in. Because a lot of the coaches that were on staff did not stay on staff for, you know, different reasons, jobs and life changes and stuff like that. There was a younger coach who actually was roommates with my brother, happened to be one of the freshman coaches at Scut. So when he heard I was, you know, interviewing for the job, he was hoping I would, I think, get it a little bit, and he's still on my staff. He's now my JV coach. And then just through different, you know, walks of life, acquired other people. We have, you know, I have another varsity assistant who was with me at Millard North, stopped coaching for a little while, came back to coach. My second year, a Scut alum, her husband, they moved to Omaha from Boston, and he was a coach in Boston, and he was looking to continue to coach. And he reached out to the AD at Scut, and you know, they had lunch, and then he introduced him to me, and now he's been on my staff for the last 10 years. And so just through those types of things, I mean, we've have what we call alumni open gyms in the summer. And, I mean, one time a guy brought his brother-in-law, and same thing, the guy was marrying a Scut grad, and he played at Lindenwood in St. Louis. And I'm watching him like, man, this guy can play. And, you know, and then a few years later, we needed a freshman coach, and I reached out to him and said, do you have any interest? And he said, yeah, I'd love to. And so he's been a great addition. There was a guy who was on staff before I got there who left, and he came back. His family are big Scut people, and he's now got a freshman in our program. And then the AD that hired me, his son, he coached for me, and then went off and did some college coaching, and then came back and now has a teaching job at Scut, and he's my sophomore coach or reserve coach. And so I'm incredibly lucky. You know, it's hard to find, you know, good coaches sometimes in this day and age, because it's, you know, you're not paying them $1 million, and the time that you're asking them to spend is, you know, so much. And so You know, I'm super lucky with the group that we have. And like I said, we've been together for a long time. Everybody kind of knows, you know, the expectations or the Scut way or what we stand for. And so that's very helpful for me.
Any thought, or as you took the job going from public school to private school and then sort of comparing what it's like coaching at one versus the other, differences, things that are similar, there's no difference, just how did you approach that, or what's your experience been like with the 8 years you were in a public school setting and then now being in a private school setting?
Yeah, I mean, you know, demographic wise, it wasn't a huge difference. I mean, you know, we're a 5 minute drive, you know, from the school that I was at before. You know, probably the biggest thing is obviously size. I mean, I was in a school with 2,500 kids and now I'm in one with, you know, 700, 800. And, you know, I would say kind of it's just a little bit more of a, I want to say, you know, closeness, family type atmosphere where, you know, the public school, the big school that I was at, in terms of parents being involved and all that stuff, you could kind of keep things, you know, at arm's length. And I think in, you know, a school like Scut, you got to embrace to a certain, you know, point that, you know, people want to help out. People want to, you know, they want to talk to you. People want to, you know, see you around and they want to do things with the kids. And, you know, you have the fundraisers and you have the service and all the great things that, you know, go with a private school that, you know, that I've really enjoyed. And, you know, I'm also lucky that I coach, and teach at a school where the administrators, were all ex head coaches. So they get it and they're super supportive. And so I think kind of just that and the smaller, environment are probably the biggest, you know, differences.
When you think about yourself as a head coach, and obviously at this point, 11 years in, not that you've got it all figured out, but you're probably pretty comfortable with sort of who you are as a head coach. How far into your time at Scut were you until you sort of felt like, hey, I've kind of got my philosophy, I've got the pillars of my program, I've got the things that I want this program to be, I sort of have those things figured out? Obviously it's never 100%, and obviously you're always adapting and changing to each individual team, but just from an overall perspective in terms of your philosophy and sort of the self-awareness and understanding of yourself as a head coach, how long was it before you felt completely comfortable with where you were as a head coach, if that question makes any sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, it took a while. I mean, it takes a while to kind of to figure it out. And we were lucky because we had some early success. And, you know, that maybe was, you know, that maybe was a little bit misleading in terms of, you know, you have success, that doesn't mean you've established, you know, what you want to establish or figure it out. I mean, I'm 11 years in and trust me, I still don't have it figured out. But, you know, there are some things that I think, you know, as I got into year 3, 4, 5, and then, you know, 7, 8, 9, there's things that, you know, you definitely want to hang your hat on. And there's things that definitely you want to make sure that, you know, don't get left in the wash, if that makes sense. And sometimes when you're trying to figure it out in the beginning, it's hard to even, you know, you're trying to figure out, you know, some of the basic things. And so, you know, to have the other things, the, well, you know what, we got to take time to to do service. We have to take time to, you know, help out with this or that or whatever. And if it takes away from basketball, it's still okay. And that's something that I still probably struggle with too. It's like, well, you know, what about practice or what about this or what about that? It's like, well, you know what? We have a student manager who's worked his butt off for us for 3 years and he's a great bowler. And you know what? We're all going to go to the bowling alley, you know, in the morning at 9 and support him at the, you know, at his bowling tournament. And, you know, just figuring those types of things out, that those things are still important too, is something that honestly, it takes a while. If you're talking about the basketball stuff, you know, I think, you know, you kind of knew what you wanted to be, but you know, you kind of narrow it down because there's a lot of things and it's like, okay, like you said, what are the pillars, you know, right. What are you going to stand for? And so, you know, for us, I think we try to hang our hat on giving great effort, doing the little things really, really well. And for us, it always starts on defense. I think our kids know that, you know, you better like defense. You better want to play defense. You better, you know, want to guard or you'll have a tough time, you know, playing in our program. And that's something that we try to, as soon as they step into our gym, get them to understand that, you know, for us, it starts on that end. But yeah, those are some of the things, I guess, that I've figured out along the way. But like I said, I still got a long way to go.
When you think about your development as a coach and trying to get better and improve, how do you go about doing that? Where are you going? Are you talking to mentors? Are you studying film? Are you reading books? I'm sure you're doing a combination of probably a lot of those things, but what's your go-to when you think about, hey, I need to improve some aspect of my coaching? What are some things that have worked for you in the past?
I mean, yeah, I'll look at different stuff that people do, whether it's, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, away from the X's and O's, obviously, you know, books and stuff like that. If you're looking at videos and things like that, I think are good, but probably the place I go, first is, you know, if I know somebody who does that really well, you know, there's a college coach close to here who, you know, 1 year we wanted to kind of start implementing, you know, a ball screen type offense. And I knew he did it. And I knew he did it really well at a, you know, I'm talking about like national championship level. And I knew him and I just, you know, I went to their practices. I sat down with him and he helped me through it. I mean, I would call him in the middle of the season and say, we're really, really, you know, struggling with this, you know, part of it. What, you know, what do we got to do? And it's funny because sometimes when I had questions for him, he'd be like, you know what, when you figure it out, you tell me. And so, those kind of things are fun. I'm lucky because, you know, I had a kid play for me a few years ago. His dad's an assistant at Creighton. So I know those guys fairly well and, you know, oftentimes go, watch them practice and pick their brains. Now it's a different, you know, that's a different level, different beast, but you know, you can tweak things and, you know, steal things and, you know, make them your own, so to speak. And I feel like we've done that with some things too, just going and watching a lot of people play and practice, you know, and then just talking to the coaches that, you know, you look at and go, man, you know, they're doing something right. And, you know, I want to know, you know, what it is that you know, they hang their hat on, they're emphasizing and such. And so, done a lot of that over the years. And I think it's been, you know, super helpful. Still kind of want to, you still got to kind of, you know, be you, so to speak, but, always trying to get better for sure.
Talk a little bit about leadership in your program. How do you develop leaders with your players and what do you look for in a leader?
Yeah, I mean, that's one that, you know, I think is super important as I, you know, do this longer. I think, you know, you often, there's correlation to having good leadership and having successful seasons. And that's why we did a little bit of trying to start a leadership council at SCUT, a multi-sport one, and had it rolling pretty good. And COVID kind of killed it a little bit, just because, you know, you're trying to figure out how to just have school, let alone, you know, leadership council meetings and stuff like that. And so we're just now trying to get it back rolling again. But things like that, we've taken kids to leadership summits. I think talking to them, you know, about situations, stuff like that, you know, maybe helping them find the way that some of the really good leaders that came before did. And in terms of a leader, I mean, obviously I look at someone who's, you know, a hard worker, has the respect of their teammates, holds people accountable, you know, doesn't make excuses, doesn't point fingers, and, you know, someone who has kind of a mental toughness about them that you need. Whether it's you, and usually when adversity hits, you know, whatever that looks like. And, you know, that could be in a drill in practice, that could be in the middle of the third quarter, that could be, you know, in a two or three game, you know, losing skid or whatever. But who's kind of, you know, who's your voice, who's your guy who's going to keep the, you know, troops rallied and heading in the right direction. I don't know. Those are the kids that I think of. Usually they're pretty tough kids. And honestly, you know, they don't have to be your best players, but it's tough if they're not probably your hardest workers. And, you know, that's when you, I think, really get special teams, is when your best players are your hardest workers and your leaders. You know, usually you get some pretty special things. It's usually a pretty good recipe, I would say.
Yeah, that's the best combination if you can get it. You don't always get that, but it's definitely, if you can have your best player or your best players be your hardest workers and your best leaders, that's usually when you have the best chance of success. It also makes it the easiest on you, right, as a coach.
Correct.
If your hardest working kid is your seventh man, it gets a little bit more difficult to kind of navigate through those waters than when it's your best player who ends up being your best leader. You talked a little bit about practice and obviously getting kids to pick it up and being high energy and doing what they need to do on the practice floor. When you think about putting together a practice, what are some keys for you in terms of preparation and planning when it comes to practice?
Well, it depends on what part of the season it is, obviously. I mean,
right.
You know, we're in the dog days right now where, you know, you're usually in a day. I mean, a lot of times you're in a day after a game, or, you know, maybe the day before or whatever, you're kind of, you know, game planning for, you know, that next opponent. At the same time, I think you got to continue to, you know, we coin days a lot of times where, you know, today's about us. So, you know, we might do a few things that'll prepare us for the opponent we have in 2 days, but it's still, the majority of it's about us getting better at the things that we need to. But we put a huge premium on, you know, for whatever time it is, whether it's, you know, early in the season where you're going 2 hours or a little over 2 hours, or, you know, later in the season where you start to try to cut it down a little bit and stay sharp and focused, that, you know, as soon as practice starts, we're going to be high energy. And like I said, you know, some of the things that we emphasize are, you know, bringing that energy and that talk. And when people walk into our gym, You know, it should sound like a winning gym. You know, we say that all the time, is if there's not energy and there's not talk and there's not pop, you know, usually you're probably in a losing gym. And so, you know, we want our gym to sound like a winning gym. And that's kind of, you know, one of the, like I said, one of the phrases we coin. But, you know, in terms of you know, planning a practice, we want to get going, or I want to get going right away. So something that's got us moving and going, something usually full court, you know, something that's usually getting shots up, because, you know, we want to get a lot of shots up still, you know, throughout practice. And then normally for us, like I said, it starts with defense, some sort of defense, whether it's like a breakdown defense day, or it's just a, you know, we're going over the other team's stuff because it's, we play the next day, or even just, you know, half court. We have a lot of different competitive defensive drills that we do throughout the season. You know, variations of shell, some of it's just, you know, straight half court defense, but there's different stipulations and stuff like that is usually where we start before we get into anything, you know, other than that, whether it's transition, offense or defense, rebounding, you know, working on offensive, you know, stuff, you know, sets, things like that, you know, we kind of move into. But like I said, our pillar and what we do right out of the gate is, you know, very high energy. We also, you know, we're a pressure team most of the time. And so we're usually pressing people. And so most days, there aren't a lot of days where we're not, you know, at least taking 10 minutes and, you know, doing some sort of, you know, pressure drill, you know, something that gets us going. And we have a few things that we do, you know, in that regard, that just keep things moving pretty fast. And we make it competitive too. We use the scoreboard for almost everything that we do, you know, so that there's a winner and a loser.
How do you divide up your teams in practice? Are you typically keeping your starters together going against your second team? Are you mixing in guys 6, 7, and 8 with the starters? Do you have balanced teams? Does it vary practice to practice? Again, time of the season. How do you think about just putting together the groups that are going to compete against each other in practice?
Yeah, I mean, very, very time of the season. You know, like in the beginning, we'll mix it a lot. When you get into this part of the season and you've kind of established a, you know, maybe a rotation or, you know, how many guys, usually we stay with that when we don't have a lot of prep time. You know, you get those where maybe you get a good 4 or 5 days of practice, or I think right after our holiday tournament, we had like a whole week before we played another game. And so those are good opportunities, I think, to, you know, have a day or two where you do mix and match. And now, you know, the guy who comes in for the other guy are now on opposing teams going at each other. And so I think you got to mix some of that at certain times throughout the season, you know, just to keep the competitive level as high as you can and challenge kids. And we also, you know, tell them it's competition on all the time in our gym. And so we're always evaluating, and it gives, you know, it gives kids a chance to show things. And so I think all those things are good, but yeah, for us, it's kind of hit or miss kind of when we do it based on the season, time of season.
I know you were out scouting before we recorded tonight. When you go out and scout, how do you like to organize your scout? What are some of the key things that you're looking for? Obviously there's clearly actions and out of bounds plays and personnel things that you're looking for, but what are one or two keys that you always want to try to dive into with a particular team?
I just think there's, like, when you go see somebody live, there's things that you just can't always see on film. And again, you know, that can be a lot of different things. Those can be basketball things. Those can be, I'll watch the bench. I'll watch their player interaction. I'll watch them during a timeout. I'll watch, you know, when their guys on the floor, do all the guys run over and help them up? Do they, you know, because you can see some of that sometimes, you know, a kid falls down and the teammate's 10 feet from him and turns and just walks the other way. And you're like, okay, that there's something there. You know, those are things that, like, when we watch film, I show them when other teams do that kind of stuff. And we kind of make it a deal where, you know, that doesn't happen. Like, your teammate's on the ground, he better have his choice of four hands to help him up. And so, you know, those types of things I think you see live. The other stuff is just, you know, the personnel stuff, the tendencies. You know, I think it's good to be there and see it. You know, tonight, you know, the first four shots a kid took, three of them were, you know, getting to the paint pull-ups. And so you're like, okay, that's a pretty good tendency. And you can see that stuff on film too. But, you know, how are they getting into that stuff too? So those are things kind of, you know, I guess look for. You know, I just got a text from my assistant. Sounds like I missed a heck of an ending. It was tied baseline out of bounds with 2 seconds, and the team hit a three at the buzzer to win. So I can't wait after this to get on there and see how that transpired. But yeah, I mean, just those types of things. Like I said, a lot of the stuff you can see on film, but probably some of the stuff I talked about initially is some of the stuff I really, you know, body language and when stuff goes, you know, good, when stuff goes bad, kind of how kids handle it, how they interact with their teammates, you know, the other team, the referees. Those things can give you an indication of, you know, you can't always get an indication of mental toughness, maybe, how kids handle adversity by watching film. But sometimes when you're there, things stick out, and I watch for them.
What of those things do you end up sharing with your team and your players? So obviously there's a base of knowledge that you gain from watching and scouting other teams, but then what do you share? What are the key components of the things that you share with your team to help them to be better prepared? How do you parse down what you've collected and give it to them in bits and pieces that they can easily digest?
Yeah. Huddle's great, obviously, for the clips and the, you know, things like that. You can make the playlists and watch the shots and stuff like that. But I think, you know, if you're thinking that these three things or these four things are the keys to the game, then you got to find clips that show it. I mean, we're going to play a team tomorrow that if we don't make hits, box outs and rebounds, you know, we're going to be in trouble. And if we don't, you know, keep them out of transition, we're going to be in trouble. And if we don't keep them out of the paint and force contested jump shots, we're going to be in trouble. And so we watched film today and we showed them that. We showed them, you know, here's what we're talking about. Here's the transition. Here are the offensive rebounds. Here are the, you know, when they get into the paint, you know, it's game over type of deal. You know, I think you got to show them that, you know, on film, and then we go practice it. I mean, and then the three or four things that you showed them on film that you said were keys or emphasis to the game, then you go out on the court for, you know, hour 15, hour and a half and try to execute those things. And so I think kind of consistent with that, and, you know, then having a scouting report that, you know, emphasizes it again, and then talking before the game, by then, you know, you better know what the game plan is. And so, those are some of the things that we do, I guess. And, you know, it obviously gets a little bit more specific, detailed when, you get later in the season and, you know, to the playoffs, and now all of a sudden you're in the state tournament and, you know, you're playing in a semifinal game or a state championship game, you know, you might talk about a few more detailed things, and the film session might be a little bit longer than, you know, the dog days of January.
All right. I want to ask you final two-part question. We're going to get you to be able to go watch that film. When you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as being your biggest challenge? And then the second part is, when you think about what you get to do every day, what brings you the most joy? So start with your biggest challenge and then go to your biggest joy.
Oh, man. Coaching challenge, I'm assuming you're asking about. I still think my biggest challenge is, I'm very, I don't want to say controlling, but releasing some of the control to, other people. And, you know, I got great assistants, and, I actually have an ex player who's now been helping for the last couple of years, and he's really trying his butt off, as a good, you know, hardworking young coach. You look back and I'm just like, man, that's kind of what I was, you know, 18 years ago. And so I love seeing it. And I mean, anytime your former players now are coming back and joining your coaching staff, it's just a super cool feeling, obviously, as a coach. But, you know, like even this team we're playing tomorrow, I mean, they're one of the top Class A teams in Nebraska, and he's probably went and watched them 4 or 5 times, and he's watched a bunch of film. And I said, do you want to write the scouting report on him? And he kind of looked at me funny, because I don't usually do that. But I said, you know, he should. I mean, he should. And I know he'll do a good job, and why not? And so, I think that, and then probably just managing time. Family's important, and just managing the time between, basketball and family, and my wife is, I mean, a saint, I mean, as they all are. But, I have two girls. My oldest has special needs, severe special needs, and medical, issues a little bit. And so, spending time with her and our family, and not, you know, maybe sacrificing some of the basketball stuff is tough for me, because, you know, I'm competitive, and, you know, I don't want to lose the edge and all that stuff. But, also, perspective is a thing. It's a big thing, and she provides a ton of it, my daughter, for me and our family. And coming home to her, it's really easy to, you know, it's still just a game, you know, it's just a game. And it's a game that we love and we try hard at, and we want to, you know, do our best at. But in the end, that's what it is. And the bigger picture stuff is really the most important. And, you know, I think, like I said, she really helps with that. And so that's something that I just, you know, want to continue to make sure that is in the forefront of my mind. Because we all know this is a 12-month job, and, want to make sure that's always, that my family is always number one. And it's tough, because, like I said, you know, you want to do the job the right way. And then, like I said, my wife is incredible. Because I say this every year at the banquet, and then here, she doesn't just allow me to do it. She allows me to do it the way I want to do it, the right way. And that requires a heck of a lot of time. And then, you know, that equates to just so much sacrifice from her. I'm extremely grateful. And, none of the success we've had our programs had would not have come without the behind the scenes people like that and all our coaches and their wives and families and stuff. It's a sacrifice that does not go unnoticed. And like I said, just something that I just want to make sure I'm always acknowledging. And I don't know, the greatest joy is probably this, that I get to do this, that I get to do this with great kids, at a great school for great people, great community. And I still love it. I mean, it's still, you know, it still drives me. I still am, you know, super motivated. That's hard to say when I'm on, you know, however many hours of sleep in the middle of January right now. And, you know, and we're coming off a loss on Tuesday and going to play a tough opponent tomorrow. But I mean, you gotta love those things and love every part of them. And I have a great group of kids, and we have a pretty young group. I'd say in the 8 or 9 guys rotation, we, you know, have one senior. So we have a group that's, you know, a lot of guys coming back next year. And so, you know, those things are always, you know, encouraging and fun. But yeah, just that I get to do it and do it with the people that I get to do it with, and, you know, for the community and the place that I get to do it.
Time is love. I think that's what it comes down to, right? You want to be able to do the job right, and you want to be able to have time for your family as well. And that requires lots of moving parts and pieces, as anybody who's coaching to any degree of success will certainly attest. And I thought you articulated that really well. Before we wrap up, Kyle, I want to give you a chance to share how people can connect with you. If you want to share social media, email, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I will jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody ever has questions or wants to reach out, my email is my name, Kyle Jurgens, JURGENS @ Scutt Catholic, SKUTT Catholic.com. And then, I'm not a big social media guy, but we do have a Twitter X account. And it's, @ Scutt Basketball, Scutt Catholic Hoops. So, feel free to follow along there, but just appreciate you guys having me on. This has been fun. It's, you know, you get caught up in the grind of a basketball season and don't always kind of take a step back to, you know, I don't know, reflect on how far you've come since you're a little kid to today. It's been a journey. So I'm appreciative of that too. So thank you guys so much for having me on.
Well, you're welcome. And again, we appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule, especially in the middle of your season. And I think that one of the things that we always enjoy is getting a chance to hear somebody's story. And it's one thing if you're the head coach of the Nebraska Cornhuskers and people are asking you questions all the time, and you get to talk about your story, probably you're tired of talking about it. But when you're a high school coach or you're a small college coach and you get an opportunity to tell your story, and there's probably tons of people, Kyle, in your own community that don't necessarily know that much about your background. And I always feel like this is a great way to be able to allow high school coaches and people who maybe aren't in the spotlight all the time, give them an opportunity to share your story. So we certainly appreciate you for being willing to do that. And to everyone out there in our audience, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the portfolio guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your coaching portfolio guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.